the top and flung it into the darkened room before leaping on top of the werewolf because, you know, she wouldn't totally heal way quicker than I would. And people say chivalry is dead. A deafening boom that reduced my hearing to a high-pitched whine shook the room, but the shooting also stopped, which was good. I threw a quick glance at Ricky as I lifted myself up off of her. The few bullets that had struck her were already starting to push themselves out of her flesh, and while it didn't seem like they were silver, there were a lot of them. I guess emptying 50 rounds into someone, werewolf or not, was effective. Good to know. I sprinted toward the doorway, careful to keep mostly out of the line of fire, even though no one was shooting. Once I reached the cinderblock wall, I crouched and glanced around the corner. It was dark, but I could still make out what looked like pieces of assailants strewn about the hallway in bloody chunks. I gripped my pistol tightly, tried to push down the strange sense of satisfaction I felt at killing them, and made my way inside. When no one immediately put a round in my chest, I breathed a sigh of relief. Quietly. It looked like a massacre. Near as I could tell, there had been four guys in here. But then again, they were mostly splotches, so it was hard to be sure. Still, the other team had been four guys, so that made sense. Even still, I crept forward, keeping close to the left wall so I could shoot anyone who popped out with my right hand. I'd had half a mind to go along the right wall and shoot left-handed so I could keep my demonic hand free, but that might open me up to a heart shot. It wound up not mattering either way, because no one shot me in the time it took me to reach the door at the end of the hallway. No one had survived the grenade. They were all dead. I probably should have felt bad about it, but I didn't. I didn't feel good about it either. I mostly felt nothing but satisfaction for killing them before they'd killed me. Hey, at least I wasn't reveling in their deaths. Baby steps. At the sound of footsteps behind me, I whirled, gun at the ready, to see Ricky limping toward me. There were more holes in her shirt, but otherwise she just looked pissed off. "Next time you can go first," she said through gritted teeth, leaning one hand on the wall for support. "Done and done," I replied, turning back toward the door and gripping the handle. It twisted without much effort, and I held my breath as I pushed it open a crack. No one shot me, but the smell of the room beyond turned my stomach. It sort of reminded me of rotting corpses left out in the sun. Ricky must have smelled it too, because she started gagging. I twisted my head toward her, about to ask her if she was okay, when the door jerked inward while I was still gripping the handle. It pulled me off balance, and I tumbled forward into an honest-to-God rotting corpse. It opened its decaying mouth and lunged at me. "Brains!" It groaned as I brought my Glock up and put two bullets into its brain pan. Goop, that smelled even worse than the corpse, splattered across the ceiling as the thing fell against me and slid twitching to the floor. "Is that a zombie?" I cried. But before Ricky could respond, more lumbering corpses came shambling toward me. They weren't fast, but there were a ton of them, and with each step they took, they grew more and more agitated. Even worse, I would run out of bullets long before they all went down. I was going to have to improvise then. I dropped the two closest ones with two quick shots, and like I hoped, their companions stumbled over them as I leapt back, slamming the door shut. The sound of them smashing into the metal a second later didn't exactly give me high hopes for our escape. I grabbed the lever, trying to use it to hold the door closed, when it started to twist in my hand. I grunted, my muscles cording with effort as I tried to keep it from turning further. But the zombies must have been stronger than they looked, because it began edging downward like the second hand of a clock. "Don't let them bite you unless you want to become one of the living dead," Ricky said, rather unhelpfully. "I'll do my best to keep the zombies from eating me," I cried, half hysterical as the handle continued to slide open. There was no way I was going to hold it much longer. Ricky reached past me and grabbed the handle. It helped, but not much. It was still inching open. Not good. Not good at all. "Calm down, Mac," Ricky said, but the expression on her face didn't make me any calmer. She was clearly terrified. Awesome. The badass werewolf was scared. "This is my calm face," I cried as the handle snapped off in our hands. The door jerked inward, and the ravenous horde of undead came swarming out. Ricky wrapped one arm around my waist and threw us backward across the 15-foot hallway. It gave us a bit of breathing room, but not enough. Not even close to enough. Why, oh why, didn't I save my grenade? "Use your magic, Mac," Ricky said, pulling me through the door she'd kicked off earlier. Guess that probably didn't seem like a good idea now either. Heart racing, pulse pounding, I put my right hand up as the closest of the zombies started sprinting toward us on rotting legs, while the rest of them screamed like a deranged cheerleading squad.
"Brains! Undead girls don't catch diseases! Brains! Come closer! We won't bite! Much!"
I shut my eyes, trying to concentrate despite their catcalls, but this was way worse than the demonic rats. Way worse than anything. And the smell! Oh my god, the smell! There was something about seeing decaying humans coming toward me with their teeth bared that made me scared on an intrinsic, please don't eat me level. Even still, I swallowed hard and cried out with everything I had in me.
"Ignis!"
The word burst from my lips like a thunder crack in the night sky. My tattoos went nuclear as hellfire burst from my palm and exploded outward, filling the whole of the hallway with flaming death. The only problem was, while it burned the shit out of the creatures, it didn't seem to do much else to stop them. That's when one horrific little factoid became crystal clear. Flaming zombies were way worse than the normal non-burning kind. For one, they smelled like rotting, burned steak. For two, they were on fire, and anything trying to eat you while on fire is at least 10 times more horrifying. "Try again," Ricky cried, half carrying me out of the hallway and toward the door leading out of the alcove. That was pretty much when I spied the oxygen tanks littering the rest of the gear in the room.
"All right, but you need to get us out of here. Now!"
I pointed my hand at the tanks.
"Ignis!"
Ricky leapt through the door as the fireball left my hand. Just not far or fast enough. The explosion sent us flying backward through the air. We crashed into the whale tank, and the cold kiss of water enveloped me as I started to sink into its depths. The only upside was that I no longer saw zombies chasing me, although that might have been because my vision was turning black. Chapter 21. Something dark and monstrous swam through the water beside me, shocking me back to consciousness before the cold embrace of the water could render me lifeless. My eyes shot open, and I swiveled my body around in time to see an orca the size of an SUV coming toward me. Jaws wide. I tried to dodge, but I needn't have bothered, because the super predator went rushing by me as bodies started splashing over the side of the pool above me. I grabbed onto its dorsal fin as it passed by, hoping to catch a ride to the surface. But as we went upward, I realized those bodies were moving. Damned indestructible zombies. Couldn't they have the decency to die and stay dead? I mean, seriously. I pointed my waterlogged Glock at the closest creature and fired, even though I knew it'd be significantly less effective underwater. The bullet burst from my gun in an explosion of bubbles before slamming into the skull of the closest zombie. Even though a cloud of brain and bone filled the water, the creature kept coming. Stupid underwater bullets. The orca surged upward, jaws wide, and actually bit the zombie in half. Evidently, oceanic super predators were much more effective than guns when underwater. Who would have thought? We broke the surface a moment later, and a scream shattered my hearing as the orca shifted and brought its huge tail down on a legless zombie, splattering its head and torso like a watermelon in a Gallagher show. The whale snorted a huge blast of water from its blowhole and swam around the tank in a flurry of motion that sprayed salt water every which way. I managed to hold on, but just barely. Another scream filled the night, and I realized we were barreling toward the sound. A whole throng of zombies had Ricky and were pulling her broken, struggling body from the water. Huge chunks of flesh were missing from her left arm as she tried to beat the creatures off. A cry tore from my lips as I emptied the Glock into the horde of undead. Heads burst, but it did nothing to stop the creatures from swarming over Ricky like overly aggressive ants. For every single one I took down, two more appeared to propel her thrashing body back toward the blown-up storage room.
No!
I cried, reaching out toward her in a desperate attempt to rescue her, despite the several meters between us. Still, I couldn't let them take her. I just couldn't. The whale reached the side a moment later, and I was throwing myself over the edge of the tank before we'd even stopped moving. My waterlogged body hit the blood-splattered floor a second later. The zombies were already retreating with their prize, which was a little messed up if you asked me. I mean, I had brains too, right? Evidently the zombies disagreed. The bastards.
Thanks, Shamu, I said, glancing back at the whale and wishing I had a fish for it. Not that I'd have had time. I needed to get to Ricky before the zombies escaped.
The whale didn't respond in words, because it was a whale. Instead, it dove back into the tank, angling toward a zombie trying to dog paddle toward us. I didn't bother to watch the inevitable conclusion to that particular matchup, because I was too busy sprinting toward the zombies. That's right, I said toward them. Look, I never claimed to be particularly bright, okay? I shoved the empty pistol into my waistband and grabbed the still-loaded one. But as I pumped round after round into the horde of undead, a contingent broke away and came rushing toward me. I got the feeling they were trying to keep me from reaching Ricky. That seemed a little strange, though. Why would they care? Weren't they just mindless undead? I pushed that thought out of my mind while I emptied the Glock into the undead. Headshots seemed to put them down for the count, which was good because I didn't have time to dismember them. The Glock's slide snapped open as I fired the last round, and I shoved the weapon into my pants before pulling the twin knives free. Dismemberment it was. Zombie hands tore at my trench coat as I cut through them, using the 7-inch blades to sever their heads from their torsos. The knives bit into their undead flesh as I spun and thrusted through them in a desperate attempt to break through their defensive line. Gore spattered, I found myself on the other side of the still shambling horde a second later. I sprinted toward the room where they'd taken Ricky. I wasn't sure what was down there, but I was going to save Ricky from it before she became dinner. I was still a little concerned with why the zombies hadn't already eaten her, but mostly I was just thankful they hadn't. If she'd gotten eaten, I wasn't sure what I'd have done. Probably something needlessly violent. Even still, I was really hoping they weren't bringing her to some kind of super zombie as tribute. I also tried to ignore the voice screaming in my head that the absolute last thing I wanted was a zombified Ricky coming after me. I'd crossed that bridge when I came to it. The zombies behind me turned in one seething mass and ran after me like they had only one goal. Eating me. The sound of snapping jaws spurred me onward as I sheathed the knives and tried to reload my Glocks while running. It was way harder than it looked, but by the time I was through the door, I had managed to get a good 7 rounds in the weapon. Hoping that would be enough, I snapped the magazine into the pistol and charged through the room I'd blown up only a few minutes prior. I couldn't hear Ricky screaming, but judging by the contingent of zombies listing from side to side in the entryway where Ricky had kicked off the door, I was pretty sure I was in the right place. I put a round in their stupid rotting heads and passed by their still falling corpses in a rush to my own certain doom. Surprisingly, there weren't any zombies in the hallway. Even when I reached the door behind which I'd found them originally, there were only 2 more. I made quick work of them and shut the door behind me, leaning against it to block the zombies pursuing me while I reloaded my guns. I had one fully loaded and the other partially done by the time they pushed on the door. I stepped forward, letting their own strength and momentum push the door open while I spun and peppered them with bullets, reducing the throng to twitching, harmless corpses that would hopefully stay dead. Adrenaline surged through my veins as I sucked in a breath that smelled like rotting meat and tried not to gag. I took one last look around while I loaded the last of my bullets into the weapons, but seeing nothing of interest, made my way forward. The hallway veered off after about 20 feet or so, turning sharply to reveal a fork in the road. I took a huge gulp of air and decided to go left, since it smelled most like rotting corpses. Unfortunately, after about 15 more feet, I came to a locked door, the likes of which would be unlikely to have been opened by shuffling zombies. I cursed under my breath and turned to see a mass of undead humanity shambling toward me.
I'm not sure why I hadn't heard them,
but my heart damn near leapt into my throat with every lumbering step they took. Despite my propensity for headshots, my remaining bullets did little to slow them. When my Glocks went empty, I ignored the feeling of inevitability threatening to render me immobile. If I didn't, there'd be no way for me to save Ricky. And I was saving Ricky. I shoved the weapons into my pants while cursing like a sailor. I was out of bullets, and there was no way I was going to get past 30 undead in a corridor about twice as wide as I was, even with knives. That left me only one option. The unknown. I stepped backward until my back was pressed against the door and put the palm of my right hand against the cold steel. Rosero! The door swung open, and as it did, I leapt into the room and slammed the door shut behind me. I took a look around, and a bad feeling swelled in my gut. I was in a huge room filled with cages that stretched all the way to the ceiling, which was slightly disconcerting because I was on a catwalk about a story off the ground. That was a lot of cages. A squeal of shuddering metal and a hiss of compressed air filled my ears as the lock on the door re-engaged, locking me away from zombies none too soon, because half a second later I heard them beating against the metal. Well, that was lucky. I'd half worried the door wouldn't re-lock on its own. If it had been up to me to hold it in place, I wouldn't have had a chance. Chapter 22. Hoping there was another way out of this creepy-ass jail, I made my way toward the stairs. Piteous howls emanated from the cages surrounding me, reminding me of an animal shelter with particularly cruel custodians and almost no visitors. Before I could stop myself, I looked into one of the nearer cages to see an emaciated teenaged girl wearing a hospital gown. She was secured to a metal table with over a dozen thick leather straps. Plastic tubing stabbed into most of her major arteries. The other end of the tubes snaked up into a main line that ran the length of the cages before joining together en masse to flow into a huge pipe that disappeared through the wall. The way she was strung up reminded me of what Van had done to Sarah, only way more methodical and, well, evil. There was a level of cold efficiency to the place which horrified me on an intrinsically human level. Whoever or whatever had done this to these people was a monster. As I moved along the line of cages, my blood filled with ice. Almost every cage was occupied, and what was worse, most of them had two or three people in them. I wasn't sure how they were organized, but there was definitely some method to the madness, because the people in certain areas seemed similar. And as I examined the rat's nest of tubes and pipes, I realized they were connected with valves that could force their contents into the various main lines embedded in the walls. They were definitely separating the blood from the victims. But why?
"So you've found where we keep the cattle," said a voice from behind me.
I spun to see a guy about 7 feet tall with short black hair and horn-rimmed glasses. He gestured to the left set of cages with one alabaster hand.
"That's where we keep your kind, cursed. As you can see, there aren't many of you. It makes the price of your blood much more valuable."
He flashed a smile at me, and his two white teeth glinted in the sterile light.
"Wow. I didn't even know they made lab coats that size," I said, wishing I hadn't emptied my guns into the zombies. If I had, he'd already be a slowly cooling corpse on the floor. "Is there a big and tall for lab geeks?"
"Make all the jokes you want, but you're never leaving this room."
He spat a gob of dark fluid onto the grated floor, which was a little gross, even though I was pretty sure the grating was so the refuse could drain away. It sort of made me feel bad for the people on the bottom floors. But then again, most of them seemed fitted with catheters.
Somehow that thought made me shudder. "What the hell is this place?" I asked, trying not to gag as I sucked in a breath. The stench was unbelievable, the soul-crushing mix of excrement and human suffering.
"You ever met a vampire?" the guy asked, grinning at me in a way that revealed two huge fangs jutting from the upper part of his mouth. "Well, in some places it's really hard to hunt, and no one wants to do that anyway, especially with disease and all that. I mean, vampires are already dead, so it isn't like they can catch HIV or anything. But still, diseased blood tastes bad."
He made a face like he'd sucked on a lemon.
"And then there's the more refined market. Connoisseurs will pay a lot of money for a few ounces of blood from this or that. I try to make sure I always have this or that."
"So you're harvesting blood below SeaWorld?" I asked, hardly able to believe that was the case. "To sell to vampires?"
"Bingo. Except for the SeaWorld thing. We're not owned by that company. They don't treat their whales half as nicely as we do."
He shrugged like that somehow made up for the dozens and dozens of people locked in cages having their blood pumped out so it could be sold to the vampire 1%. I mean, I wasn't liking the whole hunting innocent people on the street thing much either, but that seemed like a better alternative to this. "Let me guess, you used the zombies to chase me down here so you could stick me in a cage and sell my blood to the highest bidder?" I asked, raising an eyebrow at him.
"You catch on right quick."
He spat another gob onto the grate and stepped into the light. His skin was so pale he was damn near bone white.
"Cursed blood is like heroin to us undead."
He licked his lips.
"Still, yours hasn't aged nearly long enough. Give it a few decades and your flavor will really develop nicely, especially since we'll barrel-age it in French oak."
"Why the hell does everyone want to eat me just because I'm cursed?" I growled in a sudden fit of anger, unable to believe I'd seriously stumbled into the lair of a vampire winemaker. How could that even be a thing?
"Well, I'd eat you anyway. I'm equal opportunities that way."
The guy shrugged, and the movement made his glasses slide down his thin nose. He pushed them back up reflexively.
"Now, let's get this over with, so I can put you in a cage and go tend to the werewolf."
Fury and hatred exploded through me as the guy completely vanished from view. There was no way I was letting him put Ricky in one of these cages. I whipped my body around and ducked. His arm swung over my head from behind. I hadn't been exactly sure what he was going to do, but judging by my dealings with supernatural flunkies, they always seemed to try to show just how fast they were by super-speeding behind my back or going for my throat, both of which could be avoided by ducking. I surged upward with the full force of my legs and smashed my right fist into the underside of his jaw. His head snapped backward with a horribly satisfying crunch as his feet literally lifted from the ground. He crashed backward into the cage behind him and slumped against it, clearly dazed. Admittedly, I was a little sad I hadn't finished the job with one punch, but if I hurried, I'd get the chance to try again. Before I could take more than two steps, a clawed hand burst through the guy's chest, clutching his heart. The vampire's face went completely white as the hand curled into a fist, crushing the heart in a way that made ichor spray out from between its fingers. As this happened, the dude in the lab coat turned to dust and crumbled to the ground. It was strangely satisfying, but mostly gross, because it filled the air between me and the cage with ash, and I had no desire to suck in a breathful of charred vampire.
Thanks,
I said, not sure what to do as I stared into the cage, trying to make out the occupant. I wasn't quite sure how he'd managed to get free when everyone else seemed stuck in a medically induced coma. But hey, I wasn't about to go looking the gift horse in the mouth.
"We'll call it even if you get me out of here,"
croaked a strangely familiar voice from inside the cage.
I promise not to eat you.
All right, I said, because how could I not agree to a promise like that? As I approached, I saw a man who looked remarkably similar to Ricky. He had the same red hair and green eyes. Bloody tubes trailed from his body, and his wrists and ankles looked like they'd been gnawed down nearly to the bone. Had he done it so he could slip off his bindings? It seemed reasonable if he was a werewolf, since they healed remarkably fast. Still, it made me wonder how long he had been lying there on the table, waiting for his chance to take out the jailer. From the look of how emaciated he was, it had been a while.
Mac?
He asked, shock filling his voice as recognition flashed across his features.
Seriously? Of all the fucking people?
Bobby, I replied, my jaw literally dropping open in surprise at finding Ricky's brother trapped down here. But then again, he had been captured by Pierce. Why wouldn't he have been in the vampiric wine cellar?
I can't believe you're here, he said, shaking his head in disbelief.
Yeah, well, you know me. I like to stab people.
I shrugged and pulled open my trench coat to reveal the knife strapped to my right leg.
I figured this was as good a place as any to get my jollies off with Mr. Pointy.
You're one sick son of a bitch, you know that?
Bobby said, leaning against the cage in a way that suggested his energy levels were diminishing at a fantastic rate.
Still, I'm more than a little glad to see you. I didn't know you were in the vampire hunting business.
Actually, I came here with your sister to rescue you from Pierce, I said, not feeling like explaining my current situation to a near stranger. Now stand back while I get you out of there. This is going to get bright.
I pointed my hand at the door to the cage.
Wait, you came with my sister?
He asked as I put my finger to the cage.
Rosero, I said,
glad I didn't have to try to blow the cage open with hellfire. There was a very good chance things would get very messy if I did. There was a minor flash of light, and the door swung open. Instead of coming out, Bobby stood there looking at me like I just had sex with his puppy on the grave of his grandmother.
Mac, please tell me Ricky didn't come here with you, he said, taking a wobbly step toward me.
Why?
I asked, suddenly extraordinarily concerned.
Pierce has been trying to add Ricky to his harem for the last 6 months.
He shook his head.
That's why he put me in here,
he gestured to the cage.
He was always trying to use me as leverage so he could force her into becoming his seventh wife. If that happens, her strength as alpha will be added to his own. We have to save her before he succeeds.
A surge of rage I couldn't rightly explain surged through me. I didn't know a lot about werewolf culture, but the combination of Bobby's distress and the idea of Pierce forcing himself on Ricky made me want to kill the guy even more. I hadn't even thought that was possible.
Do you have any idea where the zombies who chased us would have taken her?
I asked, moving toward Bobby so I could offer him my support. Admittedly, I felt a little bad about leaving everyone else here, but there was no way in hell I was letting Pierce add Ricky to his harem against her will so he could absorb her alphaness. And there wasn't time to deal with hundreds of people right now.
Yeah, I can take you there,
Bobby said, right before he decked me full in the face. My nose broke with a crunch, and I fell sprawling backward. As the back of my head cracked against the cement floor, the last thing I saw was his fist coming down. Chapter 23. I wish I could say waking up after getting knocked unconscious was new, but really, it felt pretty been there, done that. As my eyes fluttered open, I realized I was locked in Bobby's cage in the lab. I was also strapped to his bed and wearing a vest made from dynamite, C4, and connective bits. The bomb seemed like an overly hazardous precaution, because it would probably destroy the facility, or at least a huge part of it, and as far as I knew, Pierce had no reason to do that. Then again, this vest was likely the one Bobby had been wearing since I doubted he'd had the time and material to fashion something from scratch. He was a werewolf, and werewolves, as I knew from experience, were notoriously hard to kill. For all I knew, this would have given Bobby little more than a flesh wound. Why Bobby had locked me up and strapped me into his suicide bomber vest was a mystery, but not one I couldn't beat out of him once I got free. You know, assuming I didn't go with the Mac Brennan standby of shooting things that annoyed me in the face. As I tried to wiggle free, the vest began beeping angrily. That didn't seem good, so I stopped, and much to my delight, so did the beeping. Okay, vest, we understand each other. Struggling is bad. I let out a long, slow breath and tried to figure out what was going on as I glanced around the room. Some of the other cages were open, and if I had to guess, I was pretty sure those cages probably belonged to other werewolves. I mean, I was just guessing, but here was what I think happened. Bobby, being the dumbass he was, had brained me and put me in his cage for some stupid reason that probably made perfect sense to him and him alone. After that, he'd rescued the rest of his packmates and left everyone else behind, because they weren't werewolves. To be fair, it wasn't a bad plan if you had the humanity of a sociopath. But then again, for all I knew, the other people in here were bad news. Being locked in a vampire's wine cellar didn't mean you were a good guy. It just meant someone worse had found you and wanted to eat you. No, this place was like that scene where the mugger who stole the purse from the old lady in the movie gets shot by the assassin who was the movie's real villain. In spite of myself, I struggled again, and the vest beeped at me. The sound grew shriller with each movement. I stopped, and the vest once again stopped beeping. Stupid vest. Any help right now would be great, I said to no one in particular.
You know, you do have a spell specifically designed to unlock things.
The cat demon purred, and the sound reverberated across my mind like a fading drumbeat. I shut my eyes and concentrated on her, but all I got was the vague impression of her licking her paw before using it to clean the hair out of her face in the way cats do.
Just saying, it might be worth a whirl. What's the worst that could happen? You blow up?
Despite the cat's stupid, mocking tone, a surge of hope exploded through me. Her plan wasn't half bad. I called upon my power and mumbled the word to my unlocking spell. Rosero. The bindings holding me to the bed opened like, well, magic. I muttered a nearly silent thanks to the demon. It shrugged smugly at me and vanished back into the ether of my mind. I started to sit up. The movement made my vest let out an ear-splitting shriek, so I did what any self-respecting person cursed by a crazy cat demon and locked in a cage would do. I stopped moving and very carefully loosened the straps on the vest. It wasn't very difficult since it was mostly just draped over me. Bobby probably hadn't expected me to get free, which was stupid since I'd used the exact same spell to free him, but he was never the sharpest knife in the drawer. Once the last of the straps were pulled loose, I started to slide out from beneath the bomb, careful to keep my motion to a minimum. After what felt like forever, I managed to slip the device off and found myself standing on the floor. The bomb was mostly a mass of wires hooked into a big chunk of C4. A couple red lights blinked ominously, but it didn't seem to have any kind of timer. There were also a couple sticks of dynamite, probably to prevent me from just incinerating the thing with hellfire. C4 probably wouldn't have exploded in that scenario, but dynamite sure would have.
All right, Bobby. This time when I find you, I am stabbing you, I muttered, making my way to the cage's door and opening it with magical ease. He had taken both my hunting knives and my empty guns, but thankfully I still had the knife in my boot. I pulled it free and made my way past the cages. Part of me wanted to try to free people, but the last guy I'd freed had broken my nose and strapped a bomb to my chest. I wasn't getting fooled twice. Now, when this was over, I'd consider calling in a tip to local law enforcement. For now, I had some guys to go kicking the balls. Repeatedly. The door at the top of the stairs opened without me having to use any magic. And even better,
There were no zombies. There were, however, pieces of zombies, and from what I could tell, a decapitated, partially transformed werewolf. But the battle was long since over. I wasn't sure how long I'd been out, but I wasn't betting on hours, since the brainless werewolf was still warm to the touch.
Bobby must have rallied the troops to bust through the zombies, I said aloud, and couldn't keep the smile out of my voice. If my enemies wanted to murder each other, well, I was all for that. Now I just needed to find Ricky and Pierce. How hard could that be? That was also when another thought struck me. What would happen if a room full of crazed monsters were let loose in the facility of an evil madman? Would they go all cabin in the woods and kill everyone in an apocalyptic bloodbath? I wasn't sure, but I was definitely inclined to find out. I spun on my heel and looked back through the door. I very slowly raised my right hand and called upon my power.
Resero!
A wave of scarlet swept out from my hand. Wooziness filled me, and I stumbled, partially collapsing against the door's frame as my magic struck the first of the cages. Doors swung open, and as they did, blood began to drip from my nose. Screaming filled my ears as hundreds of monsters began to stir within the now open cages. My vision went spotty, and my stomach lurched violently. The cheeseburger I'd eaten earlier came rushing up out of me as I collapsed to the ground. My muscles seized and cramped in a way that was unlike anything I'd ever experienced. I tried to push myself to my feet, but as I did, my tattoos winked out. I'd only managed to open about a third of the cages, but even that had been too much for me. I shook my head, trying to clear my vision, but I almost wished I hadn't. My right arm had blistered, and my tattoos had faded so much they were barely visible on my ashen skin. Well, this had been a stupid plan. Now I was exhausted outside a room full of awakening, uncaged monsters, and I'd drained my magic. I pushed myself onward, trying to ignore the spots flashing across my darkening vision. As I stumbled forward, leaning against the blood-spattered wall for support, an inhuman shriek exploded from the room behind me. My spider sense went absolutely nuts as I whirled to see a decayed, emaciated woman with hair like a basket of live rattlesnakes coming straight toward me. Maybe releasing all the monsters had been a bad idea. Chapter 24. The crazy shrieking bitch hit me dead center in the chest and passed straight through me, like I wasn't even there. Cold, unlike I'd ever experienced, exploded across my torso, and my next breath came out in a cloud of white mist as she continued past me. My teeth chattered in my skull as I spun in a slow circle, still using the wall for balance, and watched her disappear down the hallway. Frost had spread out along the front of my t-shirt and trench coat, and as I tried to follow her, I realized my fingernails had turned blue. I swallowed a breath that tasted like the first hint of a blizzard after a heavy snowfall, and shivered. More sounds erupted in the room behind me, and this time, instead of looking, I shambled forward as quickly as my frozen legs would take me. A muffled boom ripped through the air, and the shockwave threw me forward. I struck the ground as bits of black goo that smelled like expensive root beer splattered across the walls.
"Definitely a bad idea," I mumbled, crawling to my feet and moving forward. The entire room spun as I stumbled along, one shoulder propped against the wall for support. As I rounded the corner, I saw two men wearing body armor and wielding M16s, and after my heart stopped trying to crush itself against the inside of my ribcage, a smile crossed my lips. They were frozen into statues, presumably from the weird girl, because she was standing just behind them, one hand against a shiny silver door. Its surface was covered in fast-spreading frost.
"Hey," I called, because I was pretty sure startling her would result in me turning into a Maxicle.
"Stay back, or I'll freeze you too," she said, barely looking at me before turning her attention back to the door.
It was covered in a thin sheet of ice that crept off the frame and onto the walls and floor.
I'm warning you.
Hey, I just want to follow along behind you. Consider me Anna to your Elsa, I said, moving up to one of the frozen guards and leaning on the wall next to him. As I pried the M16 from his cold, dead hands, I realized I was probably responsible for his death, since I'd let the Ice Queen free. I sighed. While I wasn't above killing a few guards myself, something about them dying at her hands annoyed me on an intrinsically human level. I was getting really tired of the supernatural using regular guys as target practice. It was probably why I'd gone and made a deal with the devil for power. If I'd never taken this job to go after the most powerful shifter in the state, I'd have never needed that kind of help. Pierce Ambrose would just be dead, and I'd be sipping drinks on a beach somewhere. Instead, I'd indebted myself to a demon so I could get enough power to take him down, and in the process, had lost all my memories and gotten my sister and her son kidnapped. It was unfair on too many levels for me to fathom. After this was over, I was going to make sure normal people never had to deal with this sort of thing again. I wasn't sure how, but if I lived through the night, I was definitely crossing that bridge. The girl with the ice didn't even look at me, but I think that's because the door shattered inward in a shriek of tortured steel. Chunks of shattered metal hit the ground all around her, and she paused, glancing at me for a second before disappearing up a flight of stairs. I followed behind her, because the only other options were to head back toward the whale tank or stay with the monsters I'd unlocked. Neither sounded particularly helpful, especially since I had no idea where Ricky was. I knew only one thing. They'd brought Ricky in here, and presumably, Bobby had gone after his sister. If I held those two hypotheses as true, well, I ought to keep going forward. As I moved along, I spotted a hallway filled with an icy sheen. The Ice Queen had to have gone that way. Part of me wondered if I should follow after her, but as I took a step toward the hallway, something exploded in my brain like a firecracker. My head snapped to the left. A door, practically glowing with scarlet light, filled my vision. I wasn't sure whether the light was real or not, but I made my way toward it anyway. It wasn't like I had a better plan, after all. I reached the door a second later and pushed it open while keeping my M16 at the ready. As I did so, a guard inside spun toward me. I lurched sideways as he fired, dark spots flashing across my vision. His bullets struck the door as I pulled the trigger on my own M16. The 2-second-long burst of fire caught him in the chest and throat. He stumbled backward over a chair and collapsed to the ground in a slowly spreading pool of crimson. I might have gotten lucky, but at least he could say he hadn't been killed by the supernatural. Okay, I was supernatural, but the bullets I'd used on him weren't. In this particular instance, he'd just been too slow, and somehow that made things better in my head. The smell of formaldehyde wafted over me as I staggered farther into the room. It was filled with giant vats of amber-colored liquid. Creatures in various shapes and sizes floated within, sort of reminding me of a combination specimen collection room and chamber used to grow embryonic aliens. To be honest, I wasn't sure which was worse. I kicked the door shut with my heel so anything coming at me from behind would hopefully have to open it before coming after me. A low, annoyed muttering caught my ear, and I turned, finger already on the trigger. A guy in a white lab coat was hunched over something on a metal examination table. He didn't seem to have seen me or heard the gunfire, or at least, if he did, he didn't care much about it. I had half a mind to shoot him and move on, but something about his nonchalance confused me. What was he up to? Hey, I called, pointing my gun at him. You're aware I just shot your guard in the head, right? I raised an eyebrow at him, and he stepped to the side to block the thing on the table from view. It was just as well. Near as I could tell, it was black and glistening, and at the moment, I was having trouble standing. If it had been a baby or something, the resulting rage might have made me try to burn him to ash. And I got the strange impression my body wouldn't deal well with the whole hellfire-flinging thing right about now.
Yes, but he was kind of a jerk.
The man pushed his flop of dark hair out of his face and turned back toward the table, dismissing me.
If you don't hurry and eat something, your body is going to start shutting down. You need to replenish the sugar in your bloodstream. Give yourself some energy to replace what you burned up doing whatever magic you did.
How do you know so much about me? I asked, trying to decide whether or not I could trust him.
You are far from the first cursed to visit my experimentation room, he said, not even looking at me. Just pass on through. I won't stop you.
How kind of you, I replied, moving toward him. It was harder than I expected, since I could barely walk in a straight line. Every step made my vision fade in and out.
Look, he said, exasperation filling his voice. You need something to eat, and there's food in the next room. Go away!
He looked up at me with weaselly black eyes and an annoyed sneer on his thin, chapped lips. He had one of those too pale white faces that suggested he almost never saw the sun, and even when he did, the two weren't exactly friends.
Just go get a sandwich or something, and you'll feel better. I don't have time to deal with this sort of interruption. I'm on the verge of a breakthrough.
Despite him brushing me off like an insignificant insect, the whole not-dying thing seemed like an excellent plan, assuming I could trust him, which I probably couldn't. Then again, he'd barely even noticed me. He was way too wrapped up in whatever nefarious research he was conducting in the same facility that also housed a vampire winery and was owned by the brother-capturing Pierce Ambrose. Even if he thought he was trying to create something great for the world, the more likely outcome would be him creating a giant two-headed man-eating monster. That wasn't happening on my watch.
Hey, is there a code or something to get the food?
I asked as I made my way through the creepy, half-grown bodies and leaned against the door on the far end of the room for support.
No, there's just a fridge and shelves of snacks.
The scientist looked up at me and wiped his brow on one loose shirt sleeve.
There's no lock. Just take what you want.
Awesome, I said, punctuating the word with a quick squeeze of the M16's trigger. The bullet caught the scientist in the forehead, pitching him backward across the room while his life dissipated into a fine mist. I felt no remorse, though. No, I felt justified in shooting him because now his research would hopefully die with him. I spun and pushed the door open, and as I did so, all thoughts of the dead scientist vanished completely. The room was filled with virtually every kind of snack food I could ever want, and as I laid my eyes upon the rows of salty, sweet goodness, my stomach rumbled like the ocean. I leapt forward before I could stop myself, tearing into a package of Twinkies with my teeth and swallowing one in two bites. I could almost feel it traveling down my throat and settling in my stomach. As I shoveled the second one into my mouth, the ashen skin on my demonic arm began to darken, and my blurry vision settled just a touch. The scientist had been right. I guess I really needed to eat something to replenish my magic. And even though time was of the essence, I decided to take a 10-minute lunch break. Chapter 25. After I finished stuffing my face with ding-dongs and Nutter Butters, I felt surprisingly better. And what's more, my arm was back to its normal shade of demonic black. I'll be honest, I never thought I'd think that previous sentence either. Still, the arm had grown on me, quite literally, and I was glad it was happy again. It meant I could blow stuff up. I liked blowing stuff up. So what did I do next? I opened the door to the weird lab with the vats and blasted it 5 or 6 times until all that remained was a pile of smoking rubble that smelled sort of like skunk. Then I ate another bag of Doritos and washed it down with a can of rodent-dissolving Mountain Dew, because I had an ironclad stomach. Oorah!
All right, I'm ready to kick some ass and play some Xbox, I said, discarding the can and Doritos bag and making my way across the snack bar to the only other door.
It pushed open easily, and no one shot me, so bonus points. I'd sort of expected the room to be empty, since I hadn't exactly been quiet when reducing the lab to a charred husk. If anyone had been in there, Surely they'd have heard the commotion and called security. Or at least looked. Turns out I was wrong. A massive black guy in a Jurassic Park t-shirt that could have been used for a boat sail sat at a desk with one hand on a keyboard and his other on a mouse. The monitor in front of him took up nearly the entire 20-foot wall and was broken into a multitude of normal-sized screens, containing images of what sort of looked like StarCraft with zombies. It was a little weird, but judging by the music I could hear emanating from his headphones, I was pretty sure he hadn't heard me over the cry of his Rush album. Yeah, that's right. He was listening to bad 80s rock. For shame. For double shame. "Hello," I said, poking the guy in the back of the head with the M16. On screen, a pack of zombies took down a werewolf, while the rest of the werewolf's pack ran down a ramp over a shark tank. He spun around, saw the gun, and nearly shit himself. At least, it certainly smelled like he did. But for all I knew, that was a normal thing. Look, I'm not against gamers, fat or otherwise, but this guy struck me as a little off. Especially because he reminded me of the fat guy from Jurassic Park who had tried to steal the dinosaur DNA and wound up getting eaten by the poison-spitting Dilophosaurus. Though that might have been partially because of his shirt.
"Please don't kill me," he blubbered,
one hand reaching up and pulling off his headphones. He clutched them to his chest, like they might save him from a bullet. Maybe they would, but I sort of doubted it.
"What's all this?"
I asked, ignoring his blubbering as tears began to stream down his cheeks. I gestured to the screens.
"Are you controlling the zombies from here?" Yes, the guy stammered. "They have implants in their heads that let me move them around. From here, controlling them is just like playing an RTS game. It's why I was hired. I was this close to beating Boxer in 2011.
He put his forefinger and thumb really close together.
"I have no idea what that means," I said, shrugging as a smirk crossed my lips. "What other surprises are there?"
I gestured at the rest of the conspicuously empty room.
"I don't know," the guy cried, dropping his eyes to the floor. "I just do the zombies."
He looked up and his eyes were filled with hope.
"Who you really want is Chaz. He does the automated defenses."
The guy looked over to an empty setup similar to his. The hope in his eyes died.
"Wait, where's Chaz? He was just here a minute ago."
On screen, a werewolf ripped a zombie in half and tossed it into the shark tank. The undead thrashed, spraying frothy crimson water every which way, until a huge tiger shark snatched the struggling zombie and pulled it down into the water.
"He probably left, since I let most of the monsters in the cages out."
I pointed to another screen which showed a battle royale breaking out in the halls. The word warning was flashing across the screen in front of the station. In fact, it was on all the screens except the ones in front of this guy.
"They're probably on their way here right now."
His eyes roamed over the screens before returning to his own. He let out an annoyed explosion of breath.
"I knew I shouldn't have shut off the automatic notifications, but they always pop up at the most inconvenient times."
He looked like he was going to elaborate, but thought better of it.
"Are you going to kill me?"
"I'm thinking about it," I said, because I was. If I did, maybe the zombies would just go dormant.
"I'll make you a better deal."